Joining us right now, we have State Representative David Bly from District 20.
Good morning.
Good morning, Representative Bly. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah.
We're heading into the latter part of, well, we've got to spring now.
We've got that far, latter part of March.
You've got some deadlines and stuff that we'll be talking about here now. But let's talk about, first of all, Governor Dayton.
Yes.
And his budget.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you had a chance to look at that?
I've looked at, and they did put out a good document, which if you go to the governor's website, you can download and look it over. Some of the highlights, he does have a proposal for dealing with the federal tax bill, and he outlines in his paperwork, if we did nothing, that would result in some tax increase for some Minnesotans.
Mm-hmm.
I think overall there would be I'm not sure of these numbers because sometimes they're abbreviated, but at any rate, he says it would be an average increase of about $200 per person, and that 300,000 Minnesotans would see an increase. If we did the full conformity with the federal tax bill, over 870,000 would see a tax increase, and the average increase would be about $489 per person. So, but the governor's proposal is to try to really be as fair as possible, and he would give about 2 million people a tax cut of about an average of about $117. So his proposal would kind of spread the benefit more widely than if we either did nothing or adopted the proposal as it is, we're in full conformity with the tax proposal or the tax bill that the feds passed.
There's going to be a lot of conversation.
Yeah, there will be. There will be.
About
and,
that.
You know, that's the overview. And if you look at the details, of course, different people are affected differently. I had some Farm Bureau folks in my office yesterday, and they were telling me the specific things they wanted. Well, of course, it's a balancing act. You know, if you give someone everything that they want, it's going to harm someone else, or it's going to make them. So you have to really look at it and try to make sure that you balance it completely. I don't know enough about, I'm not on the tax committee, so I don't know enough about the provisions that the Farm Bureau farmers were talking about in particular, but I'm sure we'll try to find a way to make it fair.
Now, as far as the budget goes, this is not a budget year.
No, that's right.
So what are we doing with this one?
Okay, so there is a small surplus, $1 million, and so that creates the opportunity for the governor to do some kind of rethinking of where should we spend some of that
money. Sure, okay.
And there also are things that are hanging over from the previous session, which from the governor's perspective maybe didn't go so well, that he'd like to try to, improve things. He's looking at early childhood funding that he'd like to promote. There's also the awful events in Florida with the gun shooting. There's a lot of talk about school safety, and so there's some provisions in the budget for increasing school safety and some things that might be done in that regard. Then, of course, the tax changes at the federal level also creates an opportunity to do something with the budget that changes things around. So those are all things that happened in the past year that require some that he addressed those things, and so that's why.
I just want to say I love the way you worded that. The federal tax code provide some opportunity. Well put. Very diplomatic. Let's talk about some of the committees that you're in. You've been involved, of course, in education with the House, and you've got some policy bills that have a deadline.
This happens really every year. The policy committee creates an omnibus bill with the various policy bills that have been presented, and so that's coming forward. And I was at the Capitol last night till about 8:30 in the evening, hearing testimony on this particular bill. There are some good things in the bill. I don't mean to say it's a bad bill, but there's a provision there that we have some concerns about, and that has to do with a rating system that would rate schools with a, give them a star rating if they're doing well based on test scores of students. And, you know, their argument is that this helps parents, especially parents of students of color, perhaps, who are looking for a better school match for their student. But it doesn't really give enough information about those things to really guide the parents along those lines. And the other thing is that the Department of Education is putting forth an effort to do something very similar to, in a sense, give a shorthand version of all the data that they've collected from the various schools so that someone looking for a school, parents looking for a school, could go to the department website and find that. It's just, it isn't finished yet. And this actually, this proposal for the star rating would, in some respects, be in conflict with that and also cost more money. I mean, we're already spending money to develop this thing for the department. Mm-hmm. Why would we want to spend more money to develop something that will be maybe more confusing?
Okay.
And so I have some concerns about it. It'll probably pass. I mean, we're not in the majority. We can't dictate what happens. But that's one particular issue that I'm concerned about. There's another small provision in the bill, or actually two provisions which affect some schools in the region, two charter schools. The Nierstrand Charter School is asking for a change in or an exception to the charter school law. They have a lottery, you know, where students sign up and enter their school that way. What they'd like to do is to allow local Nierstrand residents to have some priority over getting into the school. You might have, say, a brother or sister going to the school and then a younger sibling coming along wants to get into the school, but they have to go through the lottery process. They may not make it. Mm-hmm. And then they would have to be bused into Faribault in order to go to the school there. The same thing happens at Prairie Creek School in Castle Rock, where there may be a few, and there, that's not to say there are a lot of children there, they're just a few, but they would like to also do the same thing, where they allowed the local residents to be able to attend the school so they wouldn't have to spend the time on the bus going to the Northfield schools. So those are small provisions, but that's what's in the bill as well.
Are those special considerations, or are those problems unique to their district, or does that go on around the state? Is that common?
The first one that I know of happened a few years ago up in Duluth, and so there was a charter school there, and they also wanted to be able to have a very similar provision. There are not that many charter schools out in greater Minnesota. So, I mean, there are some, but they're not as many as there are, say, in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, where probably wouldn't be. I mean, they're probably going to have to be, you know, transported to the charter schools in the cities anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's probably not that different for what school you go to. So it is an exception that is probably unique to rural settings where you might have a charter school. In the case with Nierstrand, the charter school there used to be an elementary school, and it converted to which is still a public school, to a charter school in order to stay around. Mm-hmm. And under the charter school laws, of course, as I mentioned, with the lottery system, it isn't a guarantee, as it once was, that students who grow up in Nierstrand will be able to attend that school.
Mm-hmm. All right. Once again, State Representative David Bly is with us. Anything else on that education policy bill before we move on?
There's a lot there. I can't think of something that stands out right away. Basically, there are a number of recommendations that the governor had made, and I think those will be included. The course that it will take is probably will go to after it's passed out of our committee, will go to the finance committee and probably be rolled into the finance education bill as well.
So. All right. While we're sticking with education, though, you recently had a bill.
A resolution.
Acknowledging a local educator.
That's right.
Tell us about that.
Okay. So there is a provision called a resolution of the House where you can memorialize someone or recognize someone. I actually am going to do a resolution for WCAL, which is 100 years. If it were still in operation, it would be 100 years old. Mm-hmm. We heard not so long ago about the 50 years of public radio, but this is 100 years, so kind of impressive.
Sure.
But anyway, the resolution that I introduced was for Richard Crowder, religion professor at Carleton College, recognizing his 80th birthday. And I think it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of things that Richard Crowder has done with his studies. He's written numerous books about Reinhold Niebuhr and other theologians. But he also was instrumental in starting something called the ABC program a long time ago, which is the initials stand for A Better Chance. And after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., which is coming up on its 50th anniversary, was an effort of citizens of Northfield to reach out to students of color in poorer areas to find students who might have a better chance finding their careers and their future success if they came to Northfield High School. And he and his wife and young child, Edward, were the first host family for those high school students who came from those other schools to be in our school. Mm-hmm. I became friends with many of them, and that's how I got to know Dr. Crowder. And I think there was, because it wasn't necessarily across the board a popular thing to do, there were some conflicts. I thought it was kind of courageous for them to take that on. So
yeah, that's an interesting program that was before my time in Northfield, but I have heard about that.
Yeah.
It's been related through a number of people who were here and lived through that, and just a fascinating time, and congratulations to, and happy birthday to Richard Crowder.
Yeah, that's right.
When is his birthday?
Well, his birthday was last November, actually.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, we weren't in session then, so I couldn't recognize it then, but I wanted to recognize his efforts here.
Oh, wonderful.
Northfield.
That's a good thing. Happy half birthday. Once again, Representative Bly is with us now from District 20B. Anything else going on that this coming week?
I'd mention, I guess, is some frustration about the Minlars issue that we've been working on. We did have another chance to move it forward and kind of get the system the funds that they needed to hold on to the employees that are helping us solve the problem and bring those piles of paperwork down. But the House, instead of, the Senate passed a bill that mostly gave the governor what he wanted with a few provisions in it that provided oversight of the way the money gets spent. But the House decided, no, they have their own plan. They want to do something different. And so it'll go into conference committee, be worked out, and, you know, it's just going to delay the solution. And the people who will be laid off April 2nd or whatever. And that's a concern that, you know, we'll lose those employees who are highly skilled and able to work the system and make it help it solve the problems that we have. So it's just a added frustration that we could have resolved if we'd just accepted the Senate solution and moved on and sent it to the governor last week. But no, instead we decided to delay.
What, from a standpoint of just process, what would that need to go through? I mean, is it too late? Are people going to be delayed on the? What happens on April the 2nd? Will people be laid off?
Will be some employees that will be laid off. Yes. Maybe difficult to hire them back if we do eventually get this passed. And so essentially what that means is the people who've been working to reduce the backlog of things will not be doing that. And it'll continue to grow and things will not be resolved. So that's a frustration. You know, we recognize there's a lot of concern. This is a program that was begun in the Pawlenty administration and an effort to try to make things more efficient. I learned in education that whenever you bring in more technology, it's neat, you know, it's kind of fun to work with and all of that, but it doesn't save money because you're always having to renew things, and it's complicated. It may make some things easier, but it also restricts other things that you might be able to do. One of the things I learned when I was using the school system's technology to do grading is that it limited my ability to give perhaps more information to a student about the kind of work they were doing. Because we were in the alternative program, there were creative things we were trying to do with classes. Well, no, you had to call the class the traditional way, and it forced you to be, I think, less creative and less informative to students. Hmm. So, frustrating.
All right. We'll see where that lands. All right. Representative Bly, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate that, and we'll look forward to talking to you sometime in the future, namely next Wednesday.
Yeah, right, exactly.
All right.
Good.
Enjoy your break. Holiday break? Is it next week's spring break?
Well, I think it's the end of next week we start our break. Yep.
All right. Thanks for joining us. State Representative David Bly.